the thing that strikes me is what is being offered continually through the word, through the text, is a deepening of meaning. And so when we're stuck at the surface, it's person, place, time, and space. And when we're thinking more at a literal kind of level, we think in terms of either or. But when you think from a deeper level, it's this idea of thinking both and. So thinking from a deeper level doesn't do away with the external level. It re-enchants it. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but it brings the different levels into a relationship with one another, whereby the lower serves the higher. But when you're in that more exterior level in terms of thinking, then there's this sense that it can only be one or the other. It can't be both. And that's where you get a separation. And that's, it's kind of Cartesian, where the external is separated from the internal. And when that happens, the external wills out, like the internal is lost. And so you end up with a very shallow sense of things. Whereas when the internal is governing what is external, then you have the depth of meaning that opens up and continually opens up to infinity. So it's interesting how in our own Western cultural development, the discoveries that came as the second coming was being affected, at least in a time-space sense, those discoveries, like the ability to see into nature more deeply, whether that's at a micro level or a macro level, you know, like we're looking out into the universe as much as we're looking into things in nature. And that, of course, prefigures the ability to reflect the use of light, spiritual light. But it was also something that, in the hands of the senses or sensual thinking, became what was opposed to what is spiritual. So you have this interesting separation that occurred in terms of internal from external, or, you know, the divine from the human, or faith from charity. Like all of that was all the same principle that's at work there. And it's tied to our affections, like our affections for the memorable relations, say, as we have understood them, and how the idealization of them have supported those affections. But then it's like time to grow up, right? So it is about societies, but the societies are illustrative of mental processes. That's what they illustrate. And the mental processes is where the regeneration takes place. So they are primary. And the societal structures of the heavens and how things are organized in the world of spirits and in the hells, etc., that's all material offered at a level of the senses so that we can think more interiorly. And that doesn't do away with them. It does away with a very sensory-based meaning aspect. But the actual elements themselves and the conceptual visual, if you like, the visual imagery remains as something that supports what is more interior. And that's their use. That's the use of the letter of the word, of nature, of descriptions of how the heaven and hell and the world of spirits are organized and how they relate to each other. All of that describes psychological states. That's what's being described there. And it was interesting. So just from the, on the doctrine of reflection, I'm sure you're familiar with the numbers from spiritual diaries on this, but just to re-familiarize you with them, I'll just read them. There's a bit here, but so it's spiritual diary number, or spiritual experiences number 733 to 741. So anyway, starting at 733, it says, "I was just conversing with spirits and angels about reflection, to which I do not know whether people have given enough attention. And it was said that if they give it some thought, they will discover more secrets in the doctrine of reflection than in any other. What reflection achieves can be quite clear to everyone from the fact that we perceive no sensation of the body or its parts and are unaware of having a sensation unless we reflect on that part of our body. Then we perceive heat, cold, pressure. We even feel what that part is suffering. If we reflect on our breathing, then we feel and know that we are breathing. And in this way, a voluntary factor joins in, besides innumerable other instances. 734. Likewise, when we do not reflect on the things in our own mind or our motivation, how we are thinking, what we are thinking, what we are doing, what is motivating our actions, without reflection we know nothing except that we are, and nothing else, not what we are. On the other hand, if we reflect upon ourselves from the viewpoint of others, or allow others to reflect upon us and to say what we are like, then for the first time we are able to know ourselves. Otherwise, we can never learn, but remain in our own illusions and from them reflect upon others. So one thinks truths are falsities because one is judging from one's illusions. For such as the starting point is, such also is everything that follows. 735. Spirits especially stay after death in a state devoid of reflection. This is also the reason that they cannot tell but that they are earthly people, living in the world as before. So they remain in their illusions and live on as the character they have been at death. But as soon as the power of reflection is given them by the Lord, they know that they are in the other life, a belief to which they can hardly be brought until they are given something, or rather many things, to reflect on. But illusions rooted to their character still remain. 736. Consequently, spirits cannot at all help thinking that they are better than the rest, especially those who have been arrogant in life, who also dislike being reflected upon. However, when they are brought into a state of reflection, they are brought into a state of better life, for then, for the first time, they are able to know themselves and know more truly what they are. 737. Moreover, even the doctrine of faith accomplishes nothing at all with people unless the Lord enables them to reflect. That is the very reason why people learn what is true and good from the word of the Lord, namely, so that from what they learn they may reflect upon themselves as to whether they are as they ought to be. This reflection is given them at certain times, especially times of distress. It is of the utmost importance, therefore, to learn truths. Without spiritual knowledge there can be no reflection, thus no reformation. 738. However, they who fall into passions and illusions are unable to reflect from the viewpoints of truths until those chills and those shadows have been dispelled. And then 739. The doctrine of reflection is an entire doctrine, and without it no one else is able to know what inward life is, not even what the life of the body is. In fact, without reflection from a knowledge of truths, no one is reformed. For this reason, the Lord is delivering to the people on this earth, because they are living in a corrupt state, written down truths. From these, as from a wellspring, they may draw a knowledge of truth that will enable them to reflect on themselves, or more truly, from which higher knowledge inscribed upon the memory, the Lord may cause people to reflect upon their falsities and the like. Therefore, without spiritual knowledge, reformation is not possible. 740. It is different on the earth Jupiter, where spirits warn them and raise up and display before them whatever they had wrongly thought and done. So reflection there takes place through revelations, as mentioned before. Revelations cannot take place on this earth because the door toward heaven has been closed, and people's thoughts are only drawn up to heaven by the Lord at certain times. The rest of the time they are concerned with nothing else but bodily, worldly, and earthly matters, and upon these they reflect. If in these circumstances the door towards heaven were open to them, as it was to Cain, with whom spirits could even speak, then falsities would so mix themselves together with truths that they would never be separated. Thus they would be damned to eternity. This is therefore guarded against. And finally, 741. In place of the appetite people in bodily life have for eating and drinking to nourish the body, spirits have an appetite for, or enjoyment of, learning. The angelic appetite is for learning only what is true and good, but that of spirits is for anything whatever that is new. This desire is almost constant, taking the place of the appetite for nourishing the body with earthly food. So in every heaven there is a most intense feeling for understanding truth and goodness or matters of belief. This brings on reflections by means of which they are perfected more and more. Every word of this was written in the presence of many spirits and angels who were reflecting on what had been written and affirming it.